to start off, I thought I'd share with you two quotes that pretty well explain maybe the situation that we will be taking a look at. First one comes from a longtime junior high, senior high youth director named Bill Wannerholm, who's out in Los Angeles someplace. And when I heard of his quote, I keep it on the board next to my desk at the office. And he says simply, learn to run a junior high group and you can rule the world. And that's true. And that's one thing that I'm striving for. The other aspect of this is a quote from Mark Twain. Mark Twain says, when I was a boy of 14, my father was so ignorant, I could hardly stand to have the old man around. But when I got to be 21, I was astonished at how much he had learned in just 7 years. So we'll be taking a look at now what is a junior high person. I'm sure everybody has an outline. We'll be reasoning through that. If at any time you have any questions or comments to make, feel free to jump right in. Junior high ministry in a local church, first one of that, it's an area of neglect. It is an area of neglect basically because the adults of the church and adults generally tend to fear the junior high. I fear the junior high and I work with them at times. We tend to fear the junior high because we don't really understand what's going on. The church has always taken a look at junior high ministry as an afterthought. I used to do that. We used to plan great things for young adults, for adult education, Sunday school, senior high, Sunday school, and the hardest positions to fill were always the junior high teachers for Sunday school or just junior high period. So we usually just, you know, stick them into confirmation. They're traditionally neglected. It's confirmation only. It's a crazy age. Generally, on surveys, if you're ever surveyed on it, parents would like to see their kids skip that age. I've already talked to my 3.5 and 1.5-year-old, and I think I've got them convinced into skipping the junior high ages. And when I talk about junior high, I'm talking about age 12 through 15, give or take 5 or 10 years, depends on if they're fast developers or not. And like I said, they are neglected because adults are afraid of the junior high. It tends to leave a bad taste at times in a person's mouth. Youth workers will avoid junior highs like the plague. I mean, they will work with junior highs only as a last resort. The church and people generally tend to look at the junior high person as someone just going through a stage, with the idea that they'll get over it. If we survive, they may get over it. The idea is to let them pass through. When they get to be senior high age, then we'll give them something really down to earth, something really great that they can grasp onto. But generally, we will babysit them, we'll take care of them. Youth workers with the junior high seem to be people who like punishment, or they're accused of that. Masochists or whatever. I'm not quite sure if that's totally true, especially about myself. But generally, people avoid junior high ministry because people tend to avoid unpleasant things. Unfortunately, this has been the mistake of the church through the years. And we'll be talking about that as we go on. Second point, the importance of junior high ministry. There are four important reasons why junior high ministry, I think, is something that we should be spending more time on. It is a time of transition. It's an age of turbulence. The big transition is that people are passing from childhood into adulthood. God's wisdom on passing them through childhood to adulthood, and it only happens once in their life. A lot of people think, thank goodness it only does. It can be dramatic for some, and for some it's an easy time. thinking back on myself and being honest about it, and really, you know, thinking back to my junior high, I don't think it was all that easy all the time. And you really have to dig deep into your memory. You know, you tend to remember the good things, but you tend to forget the unpleasant things. And you really have to dig back on the unpleasant. There's a story of motorists who are on a highway. I'll use this as an illustration for junior high ministry. The motorists on a highway come to a cliff and they go off. And as days pass, more and more people just kept driving off this cliff. A nice big pile of, you know, mangled bodies and cars at the bottom. Well, the great leaders of the time got together and decided, what we need is a hospital at the bottom of the cliff. Well, that's the idea that people have about junior high ministry, that we get them at the bottom of the cliff. Actually, the junior higher is at the top of the cliff, and that's where we should probably have a hospital, to get them before they go through it. So it's a time of transition. The prime dropout rate from church peaks at about ninth grade. It is at this time that many young people decide that they are tired of being babysat, and that's when the dropout time comes. That's the peak time. It's a time of questioning. Their mind is developing rapidly, therefore they're starting to question. They begin questioning the validity of everything that they have been taught. And it's not that they are begin throwing out the parents' values, though it may seem like it. It's not so much that they're throwing out all the values, but they're going to be questioning everything. They want to learn for themselves. They've been taught for 12 years that, you know, some basic things like there is a God. Well, now they want to find out all that for themselves. But keep in mind that their mind is, you know, developing very, very rapidly. They are tired of being babysat. The childhood myths are crumbling. They no longer believe everything they've been told. They want to make sure for themselves that everything is true. But yet, an exciting part of it is that, especially in junior high ministry, is that it is also a period of openness. Working with junior highs can be tremendously rewarding because of the openness. They're very open to new ideas. You can get them to believe anything, almost. They are very gullible. They are searching for an identity, and this is done on a trial and error basis. So you can almost get a junior high person to do almost anything. And if you get a lot of them together, you got a lot of power. You can move mountains, steal houses, things on that line. At the same time, in their openness, they can't make lifelong commitments. Not at this time. The Menninger Clinic in Topeka, Kansas, spends a lot of their time studying junior high and senior high age kids from around the United States and Canada and the like. And they have come up with findings that show that senior high, by the time a person is senior high, 11th, 12th, and maybe even into, you know, first year or two of college, that they have pretty well adopted a permanent lifestyle, but not the junior high, because the junior high is still testing all the waters. So, you know, the question arises with the church, how much of a commitment should we expect from a junior high when they will be committed to anything you want them to be one day and change around the next day? And this fly is driving me batty. Anyway, maybe some of you have been to, how many of you have been to a high school reunion? Yeah. Very good. I went to mine, and it was frightening because and this was 10 years after the fact, and it was very frightening with the fact that I saw I picked out every, you know, I can almost pick out what profession those people were in. The extroverts were very successful. They were the ones in business, the ones in you know, lawyers, doctors, whatever. The introverts were still introverted and having problems in life. The nerds were still the nerds. The machos were still out there trying to hustle the girls, and, you know, just it was like high school all over again.
See? Where'd you fit in?
I'm the nerd. I speak for me. I was one of the nerds. Actually, I'm a macho nerd, but that's. But anyway, but that's senior high. See, junior high, they're still flexible, very open. Decision, it's a time of decision. Eric Erickson, the psychologist and sociologist for that matter, maintains that adolescents are not ready to, and this is a quote, install lasting idols or ideals as guardians of a final identity. Decision making is possible, but it can't be forced. If their decisions are going to have any meaning at all, they must come as a result of their own reasoning, their own understanding, and process of elimination. They will make as many decisions as you want them to make. Junior high kids are great ones for altar calls every night. You know, you can have an altar call one Sunday night and have them again, and they'll come up there. You get them, you know, all the time. The next day, they'll forget about it. It's just like it never happened. They are trying to become free thinkers, but they need the church's help. They need the church's help as they attempt to gain a better understanding of the implications of the Christian commitment. But they don't need to be, you know, pushed into making a commitment. That's going to come later. Faith development, I feel, is similar to growth. It comes in stages. You know, you just don't decide at one point you're going to be the, you know, you're going to have all the answers or have all the, probably end up with more questions at one exact point in your life. To me, faith is developmental, just like education is developmental and growth. And I think we have to keep that in mind. We can't hold them to all of their decisions. Like I said, they'll make one decision on Monday to save all the people of the world or help in world hunger or whatever. And the next day, they'll decide that they're going to be more, you know, they're going to eat more, whatever. You know, they'll take one extreme to the other in a 24-hour period. At the same time, those that work with youth, including myself, I have to keep in mind that it is not my job to produce a lot of large decisions in numbers, a large number of decisions. And sorry, I would love all of them at the time of 7th, 8th, and 9th grade to make a great commitment to be, you know, I don't know, youth directors in the world or something, help save the world. I don't know if youth directors save the world. I'd love to have them do that, but it just doesn't work. The junior high worker, like it or not, the junior high worker or teacher is central to the success or failure of any program or strategy on a congregational level or school level. You can have all the money to work with youth, you can have programs, but if you have a poor leader or a poor youth director, you're not going to have a good youth program. The person's it. You can have a great person and not any money or program, and you'll have a good youth program. The person makes it. With junior high, you must have the right people because it is such a relational kind of thing. When they register for classes in junior high, and I talked with two junior high teachers living in the same chalet with me a week ago, and they verified this. When they register for a class, the question is always, who did you get? And not, what did you get? You know, subject-wise, it's always, who did you get? Which person did you have? So if there's a dynamic teacher, you know, that person could teach them the history of trees or the history of the anthill or something, but, you know, they'll love it, and they'll eat it up because of the person. But you can have a most fantastic class and have a really lousy teacher, and it's going to make all the difference in the world. So the question is always, who did you get, and not what did you get? Qualifications. I have qualifications for the junior high worker. If you're, you know, in a congregation, your church is thinking of looking for a youth director, or if you are a youth director or something, or you're thinking about it. First off, understanding. We must be able to, or a person must be able to identify with the problems, the feelings, and the needs of junior hires. In other words, you've got to remember what it was like for yourself when you were in junior high. And that goes back to the repression that I was talking about. I have one quote on that. It's from John A. Rice, who's an educator. He writes, "But where is one who does not wince at the memory of his adolescence? Women say they cannot remember the pains of childbirth. Crafty nature blots them out, lest there be no more. So also one does not remember one's second birth from childhood into youth. The second birth becomes, in memory, a dull pain. So it does take some digging into your own memory to remember what it was like. That's one, I feel, a qualification. You have to be able to identify with the junior higher on the feelings that they're going through and the like. Second off, that person must also like kids and show that. Believe it or not, I have run into youth workers who sort of got thrust into it, and they really don't like kids. A lot of the people who write your books on adolescent psychology or, you know, for anything on that line, they may like the kids, but they don't like to be around them for a great length of time. Or they'll know something all about. They'll know everything you wanted to know about a junior high person, but they don't really like them. They don't really like to be around them. A survey was taken by Youth Specialties out of San Diego, California, and they surveyed a couple thousand junior high kids from across the United States. And one of the questions was, if you could ask one question and get a straight answer, what would it be? Anybody want to venture what the guess was? What the answer, what the majority answered on that was? Anybody have a fly swatter? That's not the answer.
What was the question?
The question that I was asked these junior high kids was, if the junior hire could ask one question and get a straight answer, okay, a straight answer, what would that question be? And the questioner, they wrote basically that, do you like me? That's their number one concern, do you like me? Or am I okay? Okay, that's what they're reaching out for the answer on, and that's very interesting. They crave acceptance desperately from adults and from peers. Not, you know, we tend to think that they want acceptance just from the peers a lot, you know, but they really want the acceptance from the adults, and they will pledge absolute loyalty to whoever gives it to them. Unfortunately, Madison Avenue knows this. The pimps know this, the drug pushers know this. That's who they go after, is the junior high, because they will make that junior high person, you know, feel accepted. They will answer that question, do you like me? Why, of course I like you. Okay. The church tells them, I think we tell them, but I don't know if we show them all that well, that we really like them or that they're really accepted. Like I said, you know, they're always the afterthought. Confirmation will take care of them. You know, we'll wait till they're done with confirmation, then we'll really start working on it. Like, they like to be liked, in other words. For youth workers, a way to show them some ideas, do things that aren't expected of you, and that's hard. Several times I've heard kids say, well, you're just here because you're paid to be. And at times I felt like I'm just here because I'm paid to be. Do the unexpected with them. Get into one-to-one relationships. Tell them that you like their company. Even parents, tell them that you like to be around them. And one thing I do is I find out when birthdays are, and I send them little birthday cards, little postcards. Junior high love getting mail. Occupant, they'll read it. They love it. Junk mail. Just throw them all the junk mail, you know. Put their name in there, fantastic. And they'll buy it or whatever, you know. But they love getting mail. So I send them things. I'll send them notes like, hey, thanks for coming to the meeting, blah, you know, stuff like that. They love it. Third, under qualifications, junior high worker has to have the time. That person has to have enough good quality time. And this varies from person to person. Some junior high workers can be very good with just a few minutes with them. Others take long. You know, it just varies. But the good time, you have to give time to them. A lot of other people don't give them their time. Fourth one, non-essentials, but it helps. And I've already changed my mind on some of these. Sense of humor, and, you know, that's okay. But the next one, communication skills. I really think that anybody who works in youth ministry has to be a good communicator. And to me, that begins with being a good listener. Someone has to listen, and they always get the feeling that nobody's listening to them. Church doesn't listen. Parents don't listen. Teachers don't listen. Their friends don't listen. So you can become a good listener. Not so much of an advice giver, but a good listener.
How do you get them to talk? That's what I'd like to know.
What's that?
How do you get them to talk? You've got, in order for you to listen, they have to say something to you. You know, you have to.
That's right. That's right. Then there's the other spectrum, too. How do you get them to shut up any longer?
I don't have that problem.
Oh, okay. I've always had that problem. How do you get them to shut up? Then I learned that even when their mouths are open, they are listening. It's amazing. I think their ears are in their mouth a lot. But they can do, you know, they can be there, you know, playing an instrument, listening to records, doing their homework, and you'll say something to them, like, and it's like, you know, bounced off them, and, you know, an hour later, they heard you. It's amazing. But how do you get them to talk?
Mm-hmm.
Gee, I don't know. Hit them? No.
There are times when that would be what you'd like to do.
That's right. Well, that's where letter C here under non-essentials come in. It's called patience. You know, I tell people that I wear a beard to hide the scars underneath my bottom lip because I always bite the lip a lot. They will tend to say a lot of things that they don't mean to, or they will say a lot that they don't think through, but that's just their, you know, what they're going through. Getting help, a good ratio for youth ministry is 1 to 8 or so. Depends on what type of kids. If you get more than that, that relationship is hard to develop. I've got a good relationship with about, you know, 6 to 8 kids, but after that, it's hard. So search out. And for, it's good to get, if you have a predominantly girl youth group or groups, then get some women to help you. If you have predominantly boys, then get some men. The ideal situation for junior high is women with girls and with, you know, men with boys. It's still ideal at this time. That doesn't mean you can't mix it up. I mean, I'm the youth director, and I've got girls and guys. So you were going to say,
why is it ideal?
Well, we'll be talking about it later too. But there's a lot of modeling going on. They're looking for people to model after, for one thing. And there are certain things that girls would rather talk to, you know, women, you know, to women about, and boys would talk to men. 12-year-old boy, 13-year-old boy would not necessarily talk to outside of his mother. Would probably not, you know, not talk to a young woman or whatever. I mean, excuse me, what did I say, man? Boy? Yeah, boy, woman. Be easier for them to talk to the guy. That's ideally. It isn't, you know, it doesn't work all the time. And there are always exceptions to the rule. Okay? Recruit, don't wait for volunteers. If you wait for volunteers, you'll get the chronic volunteers. And they may not necessarily fit the 1, 2, 3 quad qualifications at the top, but they just want to do something. What I do is I sit down with the kids every year, and we talk about possible people from the congregation who they would like to see work with them. And that's hard because those people stay in there for about a year or so. It's hard for the ego because pretty soon the affection and relationship that you've got going is being transferred to these other people. So it takes some hard swallowing and biting the bottom lip and all that good things. But I sit down with them. They decide, you know, we get a few names and the like, and, you know, rehash it over and stuff like that. Then I go calling on the person. Hey, have I got a surprise for you? 375 junior high kids say you're going to work with them. Right? They would like to have you work with them. And, you know, if somebody comes pounding at your door saying the kids would really love to have you, you know, work with them, be with them, that's hard to turn down. But at the same time, I don't plug them in for 6 to 10 years either. I usually have a trial basis, a trial time. Depends on what we have going. Give them 1, 2, 3 months trial period, up to 6, and then sit down with them and renegotiate and if they want to remain in it, you know, and remember, they have to have, I feel, the three qualifications of understanding the junior high. They have to like the kids, and they have to have the time, and that's a biggie. And then we'll, you know, if they want to stay on, then give them a year, and then at the end of the year, renegotiate with them, and the kids too.
How do you get them to be committed enough to stay with it or not?
Well, in your working with them, they have to know that, hey, this is, you know, I'm expecting you to go for a full year on this, unless you move, or if you die, or something on that line. And hopefully the commitment will, you know, will be there. If not, you excommunicate them or something. Oh, we don't do enough of that anymore now, so this would be something good to do. But that's, you know, I think I've only had one case where after 3 months after the trial period and after we said, let's do it, 3 months later the person couldn't, and that was because they had a change in their job. They went from working days to working nights, and that pretty well wiped them out, because so many of the stuff we were doing was in the evening. You know, you still have to be flexible. You can't force a person to stay on. They aren't paid all that well, being they are volunteers, so. And there's no benefits, health benefits in the line. Okay, any other questions so far before we get into the five areas of development? Okay, we're going to talk about the five areas of development. Let's see, they're physical, social, mental, emotional, and spiritual development. The five areas that the junior high person is going through at this time. This will be basically generalizations. It doesn't always hold true because there's always exceptions. These are some of the basic considerations. I already mentioned that I believe growth is developmental, faith is developmental, education is developmental. The physical development. First one there, the onset of puberty. You're changing, or they are changing, from a child to adult. In 60 years, I don't know if you're aware of this, but the beginnings of menstruation for girls has dropped from the age of 14.3 to 12.9, and it's dropping every generation. It's getting lower and lower. So they're becoming pubertized earlier, or they begin that. There has been in the last 60 years an increase in height and weight of the average junior high person, and they basically feel that that's because of you know, our better nutrition, believe it or not, the junk foods, but you know, when they're babies, and ideal times are for people, you know, for the eating habits where you really have, you know, have to watch them are the young infant, the newborn infant especially, the junior high age, expectant mothers really have to watch their nutrition, but also the junior high should be watching their nutrition. We don't always do a good job on that. Of course, they don't help matters either. It's amazing. I'm surprised that they are eating all the food here at Holden. They seem to be doing quite all right. They don't seem to be starving. Anyway, the female growth spurt actually begins around the age of 9.5. So they already start the growth spurt. And it peaks in velocity at just under 12 years of age, about 11.8. Now, that's on the average. Now, that's for the girls. The guys, everything starts 2 years later, age-wise. So you can add two years onto that. In a whole different dimension. How many of you really realized that you were actually, you know, back in those days, were actually changing from a child to adult, or even knew the word puberty? I didn't even know what that meant. My God, I couldn't even spell it. I can't even spell it now. You didn't walk down the street. So you didn't walk down the street, and all of a sudden, zap, you were pubertized. You know, it doesn't come all at once. Finally happened, and all of a sudden your voice drops, you know, two octaves. It just doesn't happen that way. It just kind of comes in spurts, and it comes over anywhere from a 4 to 5 year period, and this is what they're going through. Thank goodness it only happens once. But what happens is that we now have what I call the yo-yo versus the car. With the girls 2 years ahead of the boys in development, well, the senior high boys are attracted to the junior high girls. And the only weapon that the junior high boy has is a yo-yo. Hey, I got a nice yo-yo here. Meanwhile, the senior high boy has the car, you know, and has the money, the part-time job and the like. So it's now it's yo-yo versus cars, and who's going to win? It's great. It's unbelievable. It's crushing. It's great to watch at times, but I see with the junior high guys that I know, it's disheartening. You know, they're trying to impress the girls with yo-yos and baseball cards and stories about football and the like, and you know, they go, junior high girls go driving off in Sunset, sort of, with in the cars.
Could I ask something
sure.
about that phenomenon? What is the matter with the senior high guys that they're interested in the junior high girls?
Because they're probably all goo-goo-eyed about, you know, the senior high girls know better. I mean, they know better in that they've been around these guys long enough, you know, and they know what they're really like. And, you know, junior high girls or junior high age, you know, persons really idolize anybody older. And it's, you know, it's very
well,
easy.
Well, I understand that part. What I'm interested in is why the guys are interested in girls that much younger. Is it because they are so naive and so gullible that they
probably
accept any that they look up? Is it still that old thing where the guys have to have somebody who's just looking up at them like they're just the greatest thing in the world? And
sure. Why not?
Gee, what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
You know, that's
I married a short girl because of that.
That's really depressing in a time when we're talking, you know, about changing the roles of women. That's really depressing.
Well, you know, college guys, too, will, you know, I've seen a lot of college-age guys with senior high girls. It's just like it has to be the level up. Like a sixth grade boy with a fourth grade girl, you know, whatever.
No. A 22-year-old man with a 15-year-old girl, there's something wrong there.
That could be problems, to say the least. Yeah. Now, if they would wait till they're 37 and 30, then we wouldn't think too much of it. Right? All right, going on. Anyway, that's my yo-yo versus cards. There's a new awareness of the body. All of a sudden, they start spending the majority of their time in front of the mirror, and if you're lucky, in the shower. But like I said, not all the time, you know. Right? They're always doing their hair, and then they, you know, peek outside the bathroom, and they run back in and do their hair for another hour. They're carrying around the combs, you know, three or four combs on it. It's unbelievable. It's like weapons. The glamour magazines come in there, and there's hundreds of those on the stands. You know, but why? Why do they start doing that? They start doing that because popularity in school, especially, and this is where their peers are. Popularity is based on good looks 99% of the time. If you aren't, you know, if you aren't cute or good looking as a junior high person, by the time you are in junior high, for them, life is over, and they're serious about it. Life is over if you don't have the looks by the time you're in junior high. What, you know, and what develops too is verbal physical descriptions. A person enters junior high as Dick, Jane, or Sally, and they come out being called zit-face, nerd, or ugly. Right? It's all physical descriptions. Hey, zit-face. No. For me, I was nerd, but such is life. Ugly, you know. But it's all physical descriptions. Okay, and then the third point under there, dramatic changes are going on along in a very short time. I've listed for the girls the complexion, menstruation, breasts, figure, voice, hair, and size for the boys. This is, you know, size especially. I had two guys in junior high, still do for that matter, between their 8th grade and their 9th grade years. The one guy, you know, during that summer, one guy grew 6 inches, the other grew 7. I used to look down, not physically look down at them, and now I'm looking up at them. It is unbelievable. Their hands are getting, they're tripping over their feet because their feet are growing so much. Their mother's talking about going through 3 different new pairs of shoes, and you know, that's the physical bit of it. Sexuality for the boys, you know, we start having wet dreams and erections, and like I said, the coordination is not really there. they're tripping over themselves and anything else that may not be in the way. What do we do about it? Well, letter B. We have to help them to understand what's going on. We have to assure them that God hasn't decided to wreck their lives at the age of 13. Okay. And we have to also assure them that their physical problems are not spiritual ones. They don't have zits all over their face because they have an unconfessed sin somewhere. Okay. Or they didn't go to Sunday school, so they're going to break out or something like that. Yes?
Don't you find also when they're in a heavy growing period, let's say there's a short period of time which they're physically growing quite a bit, their mental capacities will be somewhat changed during that period of time. Mm-hmm. I think I've talked to a lot of parents going through that, that maybe have an A student that, you know, gets a few C's or B's. You can't just get on their case too much. If you see this growing pattern, why not at the same time? Because usually, I mean, it happens, they'll come right out of it, but there's definitely an element of concentration.
There's a relapse.
When there's that real...
And we'll be talking about that, but that puzzles the psychologists. They don't understand why this happens. Okay, and I'll be talking about that. It's amazing. They can't figure out why, but there just seems to be this plateau or this relapse where that A student finally gets done, and then they relapse, and that A student becomes a B, C, D student for no big reason. And they don't know why. They're just falling back. But I'll be talking about that. I should say my authority on junior highs tends to be basically because I used to be one, and it took me more than 4 years to get out of that. And second off, I'm with them a lot. I do not have a junior high age child yet. Okay. Okay. So we have to help them understand what's going on. We avoid embarrassing them needlessly. It's good to kid, junior highers love lots of fun and laughter, and it's good to kid with them. But you really have to be careful what you say. I avoid using physical jokes on them, unless I really know that person and I can expect it back. But, you can walk, you can just crush a junior high person with just a few words, and you can all be in fun for yourself, but for them, it isn't. And I really avoid the physical jokes, and I also avoid hard jokes on them when you're in a group, when you're in a large group, because then you make them look bad, and that, as we will see, peers, is the lifeblood of the junior higher. Okay, so go ahead and joke with them, but make sure you know who you're joking with, but avoid embarrassing them needlessly, like in front of relatives and grandmother and all that good thing. Yes,
what is
smothering them with kisses.
What is your response to their name calling or their contact with their own peers, as you said, when they are making fun of other people or things that they say about others? Do you let them settle those kind of things? Do you intervene? Do you bring it before the whole group, or do you just ignore it?
Well, it all depends on the situation, number one. Number two, I have to keep in mind that, like was said earlier, they're going to say a lot that they haven't really thought out. And, and if you quickly gave them a test on what did you say, list 10 things, they probably would not be able to pick it out what the exact words were, because it just comes out so fast. Okay. Now, depending on the situation, I don't hold back. If they need to be, in my ministry, in my working with them or being with them, if they need to be disciplined or reprimanded, I'll do it. I'll be careful on how I do it. I don't want them to dig their own grave or such. Does that help? I don't stand back and let them call each other names or other people names in the line. I don't tolerate it, and I don't think you should either. I don't think anybody. You can't be afraid of them. You just when it calls for discipline, you have to discipline. Slow developers, like myself. Affirm the slow developers in other areas. You have to watch for the slow developers, like in a youth group and the like. These are the people who will try to become accepted by doing something big. And a lot of times, and studies have shown that it's the slow developers who are the ones that get in trouble with the law, or get in trouble in school, because they're trying to get accepted by their peers. Wayne Rice from Youth Specialties had no reason in the world to do it, but he became a shoplifter in junior high. Why? Because he wasn't an athlete. You know, he was shorter than all the other guys. He was, you know, years behind them in development, but this is a way he could get into the group. So he used to shoplift and then, you know, give the stuff to the group and the like. So you'll see a lot of that happening with the slower developers, people who are trying to be accepted. That's where the experimenting with, you know, drugs and alcohol and sex and the like can come in. Okay. Slow developers. And what I'm saying too is affirm them, and in other words, find out what they may be good at and affirm them in that. Because they are striving to be accepted. And if you can show them that they are accepted, even, you know, just the way they are, that will help you immensely. Body care, a lot of times, you know, though they spend a lot of times in front of the mirror, they won't necessarily spend all that much time under the showers. They, from childhood to adulthood, they become heavy sweaters and all the repercussions thereof. And at times we have to, you know, remind them to change their socks instead of turning them inside out. And it's amazing because they are also very shy of their, you know, other bodies. And I've been involved with summer camps. And I was one summer with junior high boys, and it was amazing because the junior high boys, there were guys there that never changed their underwear. Even though they're, you know, they just kept putting one on top of the other through the week. They, you know, they would never change because they're embarrassed. They would never, you know, because everybody was, how far along are you or whatever. So keep those things in mind. Larger groups. Often best to divide by age and sex. There's such a big difference between 7th and the 9th grader. There's communication problems. They pretty well hate each other, as they always say, "Ah, he's saying." They forget already what they were like in 7th grade. It's amazing. They will forget that they were that way in 7th grade, and here they are in 8th grade or 9th grade. But this is harder to do. It's harder to divide by age and sex for learning situations, especially when you have a smaller group, and I'm talking about your small, you know, youth group. It just gets hard, but, it, you know, ideally, it would be best to separate them. There's an excellent book out called On Physical Development, which I would recommend that you just sort of have around the tables, maybe in your home or in a church, somewhere where they could, you know, if nobody's looking, they can pick it up and look at it. It's called What's Happening to Me, A Guide to Puberty. It's by Peter Mayle, M-A-Y-L-E. And I'm not quite sure who publishes it, though. It's a small little book. Excellent little book. I have a couple of copies sitting in my office. Well, it's on the table in there, and they get looked at. Secretly, but they get looked at. It's an excellent little book. Yeah. Social development. Social development. Oh, here's my friend again. The key point is letter A. The shift in social development is from dependence to independence via the peer group. It's like the peer group is the bridge over troubled waters. They're fighting to become independent, and in the way that they break away from you know, mother, father, so to speak, is with the peer group. It's a stock theme throughout all cultures, not just in American culture, but all cultures, the same thing as that peer group that gets them, that helps them break away. But the irony, there's an irony here, and that's the kids will lose their identity and conformity to their peer groups. Their strive for independence will cause them to lose their independence because they will give up their identity and become part of that group. And that usually lasts into the college age. Studies have been made on street gangs. Street gangs, you know, begin by the time you're in fourth grade on up, and the peak time is junior. And street gangs, not only in America but in England, and they have found that people in street gangs, you know, overlooking the, not taking into account possible crime and the like, that the kids that have gone through that come out with a greater security and a greater self-image on themselves than
you know, kids who probably don't have that, quote, gang or that group to identify with. Interesting little study. I got two quotes I'd like to read concerning that, allowing the kids to pick their own peer groups. First one, the junior hire needs peers to help him sculpt his beliefs, verify his new conclusions, test his new attitudes against an alien set in order to evaluate their hardness and obtain support for his new set of fragile assumptions. And the second one is, this one's from psychologists. There are times when it is necessary, when it is a necessary part of growing up to live through a particular relationship. Much growth and learning about oneself can take place even in some of the most ill-advised friendships. The only real protection against poor friendship choices, I should say, is whatever help we can give our children in respecting themselves so much that they are unlikely to choose relationships that will hurt or demean them. In other words, I feel that it's better to have a little bad influence in your life than to have none at all. You're going to learn by your mistakes, and they have to learn by their mistakes. It's a growth process. Anybody disagree with me? Last week I had a couple of got in a good talk there about that. But anyway, anything else? Letter C, they will not sacrifice their friends for their faith. They are not ready to put much of their faith into action, into practice right away. They will choose their friends nearly every time over their faith. If as a youth director, as a confirmation teacher, whatever, if you held up, all right, what's it going to be? You know, God, church, or your friends? They're going to pick their friends. Basically, their thinking is, I'll have my friends now, and I can always come back later, you know, to the faith, God, and church. But they will always, or most always, choose their friends. What should our response be? Well, I feel that we should not be made, or that they should not be made to feel less than a Christian just because of their feelings that way. We should help them to understand the meaning of their faith rather than forcing impossible choices on them. What does it mean to be a Christian? What are going to be, you know, what's going to happen if, you know, if your commitment is to God? These things might happen to you. This is the Christian lifestyle. We have to show them, but they have to be able to pick if that's where they're going to be at this time. It takes boldness. Boldness takes time to acquire. They are very reluctant at times, junior high especially, to wear, you know, if you have buttons for them to wear, you know, Jesus is my friend, or Jesus saved, or something on that line. They're reluctant to wear that stuff, or t-shirts around their peers, because they will be looked at as being a Jesus freak or something like that. So they, you know, they'll choose their friends. I will not wear that because of what my friends may say. And because boldness takes a lot of time to acquire. Long period. Wayne Rice, again, using him as an example, talks about how in the 60s he used to drive a bus for Youth for Christ. And they had little Bible study groups after school. And most of them were within walking distance of the school, and those were, you know, well attended. Lots of kids would come to those afternoons. But he drove the bus because this one had to meet someone at the church. There wasn't a location. And he would drive the bus to school, and hardly anybody would get on the bus that said that they wanted to. Because on the side of the bus it says such and such Baptist Church. Okay. Every time he talked to the kids, yeah, we want to have a Bible study, but every time he pulled up with the bus, they would not get on. They would not substitute, or they picked their friends over their faith. That boldness, that they were just afraid to do that, of what their friends would say. So keep that in mind. Oops, better pick up the pace here a little bit. Breaking up cliques, it's an exercise in futility. Cliques are nothing more than their best friends. If you analyze the groups of people that you hang around with at church, they're probably your friends at church. You know, people, even adults, tend to pick little cliques to be around. What I do is I come up with interaction or games or something that will break those, so that at least they can interact, you know, so that they aren't totally with their clicks the whole time. Get them to interact, mix them up in the life. Be sensitive to those who may be rejected, find out the reasons why, and this could be because of their appearance, they may be ugly, they may have zits, or they may be nerds or whatever, their personality is more of a nerd. It may be because of where they live, or where they go to school. I had one student, just a gem of a guy, and yet he just couldn't get into the group, no matter how hard, because the rest of the kids were all in one high school. And it's not that they rejected him so much, it's just that when he talked school, they always talked their school. And, you know, the guy just felt really out. And his school friends weren't there either. So, you know, just couldn't get involved. It's hard. Give them a sense of belonging. Something that's coming back for youth groups are like clubs or some type of group identity, like t-shirts for the church group. Okay. One that we're working on is FLY, FLY, because Faith Lutheran Youth. Junior high kids want to have a head of a fly as their mascot on a t-shirt. I haven't quite given to that yet, but we'll see. We'll see. Mental development. I would encourage you to become familiar with Piaget, Jean or John or however you want to pronounce it, Piaget and Lawrence Kohlberg. There's a book, very small book, it's called Moral Development, A Guide to Piaget and Kohlberg. You can pick it up in almost any bookstore, except I looked and Holden does not have it. I think they're going to be ordering it. I told Mary about it. If you want to know about what adolescents are going through mentally, those are the two best on it. Basically, it's a shift from concrete to abstract thought. The problem is that the church ignores the young person's need to question and to come up with a faith that is his or her own. We tend to tell them what to believe all the time. Exactly, got to do this, but blah, 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 blah. What we should do is work on, this has been the history of the Christian church. This is what the church is about. Come join us. Give them a chance to decide where they want to then. Same time, kids should not be spoon-fed. Don't hold back. There's nothing to be held back. Let them know what's going on. The steps that I have here, Piaget stages of mental development, they go basically like this. The sensory motor is for ages up to about age 2. There's little organized thinking. They only respond to the stimuli. Pre-logical, from about age 2 up to age 5, is language development. The world revolves around them. They become very possessive, very possessive. The world revolving around them. They don't distinguish well between events or objects they experience and those they imagine. The imaginary friend is a very real friend to that person. Okay. The concrete operations. Organized thoughts, they're able to memorize, solve problems, 2 plus 2, or, you know, 6,354 million times, you know, 18, they're able to work that stuff. This is where a religious question such as how many days was Noah on the ark would fit in. You're asking for a specific number, a specific answer. Formal operations, this is when they start to reason, when they begin to philosophize on their life, on what's going on, and they think in abstractions. They become little philosophers. They think in the future. They are able to relate to relations. This is where such questions as why would a God of love do something like this to Noah and the world? That's the type of question that they can deal with. The problem you have in a junior high group, you're going to have a mixture of the concrete operations and the formal operations. And what happens is either group will get bored with the type of question that's geared for the other group. If you ask a formal operator, you know, how many days of Noah on the ark, they may know the answer, but they're going to be very bored with that type of, you know, concrete question. At the same time, if you ask the concrete operator, why would God do this to Noah, a God of love? I don't know. So there's a mixture there, and that gets to be a problem, especially when you're dealing in confirmation and religious questions in life. Letter B, most of them have more than 50% of total adult mental capabilities. So don't spoon feed them. Let's give them something to really chew on in junior high. Don't wait for them to be senior high. Let them work out some of this stuff. Questions and conflicts arise. They don't express their questions always, very well. It's sort of chopped up. At times, you almost have to piece their questions together, their paragraphs into one question. We should not repress their questions, but encourage them. Let them question everything, especially about the church. The only way they're going to learn. And at the same time, we should not be the shell answer man or the shell answer woman. Let them experience it. Now we get into that question that was raised earlier, and that was the adolescence relapse. And this is what really psychologists, people who deal with the junior high adolescent years, can't figure out. It seems that when they reach the formal operations, when everything should fall into place, when they're getting their whole adolescent life under control, it seems, and all this, then there's a relapse. And what usually happens is, as we can see it, is that the quality of schoolwork goes down drastically. The A student becomes a C student. The B student becomes a D student. The C student gets kicked out, things like that. And they don't know exactly why. It's like their body, some theories are that their whole inside selves, mental, emotional, and that are just sort of pausing, have reached a plateau. And in the process, they'll relapse a little bit while the rest of themselves try to get their whole act together before they go on for the next growth spurt.
I have an example of that. So I have a very bright daughter who is in the age where it is not cool for a girl to be smart, and she would rather be accepted by the peer group, so she, has not been using her potential. Mm-hmm. And so that's a possibility.
Yeah. And that's one of the distractions under letter two. The growth bit, the sexual development and awareness, relationships is the third one. Your daughter wants to be accepted by the peer group so she'll not get the straight A's. Man, that's a big one around the junior high kids that I work with.
Especially girls.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's not cool.
It's so much with boys.
Five steps to motivation, some ideas for motivating kids to get off of this plateau. Still got to stimulate them to get them moving again. Concentrate on other urgencies and interests. Make it relevant, whatever you do. Religious education in the church has to be relevant to what's going on. You basically don't care about Abraham unless you can relate Abraham's life to today, a comparison type. Or the prophets. What Amos had to say, how does that, here for today? Prophets are great to use with junior high. Use variety of approaches and methods. Involve the kids in what you do. Activity centers. Warm, friendly atmosphere. The room, how that's set up should be, very warm, acceptable. Mess around with them. I like to, play around with them a little bit. When it comes to confirmation, play around with them a while, and before we get down to work. Be flexible. I know of a youth director who plays around about 45 minutes and then has 15 minutes of study time, and they get a lot done. I mean, that relationship prior to it really sets the tone for them. It's 15 minutes of quality time. Don't hold them to their decisions. They will change their minds. They will make lots of decisions, and I've already said that they will make as many decisions as you want them to make. Just ask them. We don't. We pick our decisions. Junior high, they'll make all as many as they want. They will make lots of not thought out decisions. They feel it necessary to make lots of them on a trial and error basis. And the church's response, I feel, that the church must develop an atmosphere where the junior high minds can be used, where they can make mistakes, because they are going to make a lot of them. And the thing is, see, if if you make them feel that a mistake is wrong, then they aren't going to try. And I think that says a lot, too. I had a guy in the group last week who popped up and said that's exactly what goes on in society. We're afraid to make mistakes. Edison went through how many light bulbs, hundreds of light bulbs, before he got the one to work. Don't hold them to their decisions. Let them, because they're going to play it out. They're going to try out decisions and see how what the reaction is. Emotional development, they're unpredictable, they're inconsistent. Their emotions are translated into actions. A lot more junior high fights, or there are a lot more fights in the junior high than there are in the senior high. And for no reasons at all. You know, basic reasons. So if somebody calls somebody a name and they'll fight, because their emotions are translated into actions, because their emotions are going through so much. They're very intense. They can't hide their emotions too well. Trial and error personality development. I think I've talked enough about that. For us, we should have patience, don't panic, but be consistent. That's the biggie. As a parent, as a youth director, as a junior high teacher, you've got to be consistent. At least try. That's a $64,000 reward, I guess, for them. Always. And number three, don't depend on positive behavior to determine success, failure, or results. Just before I came here, I had a bunch of junior high, well, not just before I came here, it was about 2 months ago, really. Confirmation. The pastor was going to talk to the whole junior high, right? And I guess I've been working with them long enough where this didn't affect me, but, you know, they're doing so much of it. It's just like they're not listening. You know? And he looked at me and such a lost stage, like, now, what's going on, you know, what's this? The thing is, they are listening, and like I said before, it's amazing. Junior high kids, I think, can do about 13 different things and get it all done, and I never see too amazing that they can do so much. I have hard enough trouble doing one thing. It seems to me that they can do three or four things at one time, and you can talk to them, and they'll catch it all, you know, even with a headset on. That's what. There must be something. They will walk around with a headset on and they can hear what else is going on too. You know, so what I'm saying here, don't depend on positive behavior. This goes to for junior high, for people working in junior high ministry, you don't see your results right away at all. And parents, you won't see your results with your junior highs. So, you know. Later on in life is when you'll see the results. And for youth workers, that's one of the biggest reasons for dropouts for youth workers. The average year the average time now for a youth director is a little over two years. And the reason is because they don't see results. They don't get that positive strokes. Okay. But I've had kids, I still am, you know, are communicating with kids that I started working with, you know, 7 years ago, 6 years ago. Well, I would not have given a chance. They're the kids I kicked out of confirmation. things like that, and you know, they got their act together. They're doing great, and they have written, you know, because I guess I meant something to them, or you know, somewhere along the line you've touched them. So that's where that one comes in. Intense emotions, don't play on them. When they are happy, they are really happy. And when they are down, they are really down. And unfortunately, the suicide rate for the adolescent, 12 to 15 years of age, in recent years has gone up 200%. Because they get so down and so depressed. So when they say that they're sad, you know, and I've had to learn this, I can't say to them, no, you're not. Yes, they are. They are definitely sad. You know, I'm bored. No, you're not bored. Yes, they are bored. You know, don't play on their emotions. Take what they, when they say that they're happy, they'll be flying as high as a kite. If they're bored, they are bored. And if they're sad, they are down in the pits. So don't play on their emotions. There's a difference between feelings and faith. One of the mistakes in the 60s was we translated faith into feelings. Get high on Jesus. You know, Jesus is a better way than drugs. Well, that's true, except If you didn't have that high feeling, then you weren't Christian enough. That's how it was translated. So we have to be careful on the difference between feelings. You're not going to be a Christian just when you feel good, or God is not going to like you because you feel good. God also is there with you when you feel bad and you're down in a pit. But they have a hard time seeing that. So they translate it as, when you're high, the world's right, God must love you. When I'm down, God doesn't love you. And they try translating that faith, you know, into their emotional type of situation. So make sure you let them know the difference between feelings and faith. Spiritual development. Said it enough already, I think. Doubting and disbelief. They are not rejecting God, faith, the church, but they are questioning and in a lot of cases rejecting authority. And they line up God, church, and faith with parents, and parents is translated to authority, and so on down the lines. So that's what they go through. Now, some of them stay that way, and some of them, you know, go full cycle and come back. So there's a lot of doubting and disbelief. They're questioning the authority. Commitment and failure. It's hard for a junior high to make a commitment because they're afraid of failure. Failure is not a cool thing to do. Junior high kids really hate to fail. I mean, as adults, we hate to fail. But we have ways of covering up a little better than in junior high. They get exposed. When they fail, they really fail. Just ask them. Oh. So it's hard to get them to commit to do anything. Application to the real world. I think I already spoke about everything that you do or say should be applied to what's going on in the real world. There's a desire to serve. They are extremely idealistic. It's at the junior high age a lot where they talk about being the doctors, about being the lawyers, about winning the Nobel Peace Prize, or being the scientist that's going to conquer cancer. You know, in one day, Monday they'll be a doctor. Tuesday they'll be this. Wednesday they'll want to be this. Thursday they'll want to do that. Friday they take a day off. But there's a great desire to serve. You can do a lot of in youth work. You can do a lot of service projects with kids at this age. You know, I could bring in 20 kids and redo this whole building in one day. Get them so psyched up. I don't know what service that would do to the community, but, you know, there's a lot of power there, and, you know, you can get a lot done with them. Importance of models. Both for parents and especially for youth workers. And what I tell youth workers when I do this is, better have your act together. It's not that you have to be successful or that you have to always be right or always, you know, you can have your bad days, but let them know that you're having a bad day. You're the model for them. I don't hide anything from my junior high. When I'm mad, I tell them I'm mad. And I may not be mad at them, but I may be mad at something else. If I've had a bad day, you know, I say, hey, I bet you've had a bad day, or I'll say, you do have, you know, I can tell you've had a bad day. I've had one too. So let's not get on each other's nerves for the next 45 minutes. You know. So be a good model. Not a perfect model, but be a good model. Okay, then I finish off by some programming suggestions. Oh, one other thought. Our faith, I got it written down here in my last little note to myself. Our faith in Christ is never dependent on our emotional condition. Jesus is with us always. He is with us when we are high, not because we are high. He's not the reason that we are high, but he'll be with us when we are high or also in the pits. Finally, programming suggestions. Learning should be activity-centered as possible. Junior hires have a growing sense of humor and enjoy fun. Plan accordingly. I know of a junior high worker. Well, he also works with senior highs. He's a youth director. And his youth ministry is basically around retreats. He does retreats through the year, 3 retreats for the kids, and summer canoeing and camping. And he has a great program going, I mean, because of that. A lot of activity. Doesn't do much with them in between, but he has a good thing going. They have lots of time, so do things with them. Don't just sit around and talk about the creation of the world. Though the best discussion I ever had on creation was with a group of kids on the Boundary Water Canoe Area, Minnesota and Canada, if you're familiar with it, took a bunch of 9th and 10th graders up for a week, and one night we stood out on this little point and talked for 2 hours standing, talked for 2 hours on creation and God, and it was great. I, you know, their minds were just going, it was hard to keep up. They just kept firing out questions, and wow, and they learned, I feel they learned a lot. The kids told me they did, and I don't remember telling them anything. So I guess they answered their own questions. I was just going, you know, I was trying to write down the questions. Well, that's a good question. I better go research that one out before I give you the big answer, right? Allow them to plan and do things, but don't push. Nudge, maybe. If you let the junior high plan everything, I feel a lot of times they won't all get planned. So you have to, little guidance is needed there. You have to nudge them at times to do things. You don't have to shove them, but nudge them. Don't be afraid to try new things. Junior hires are usually very open to new ideas. Like I say, you can do almost anything. Tell them anything. Letter F, small groups are best for maximum participation, interaction, and belonging. Larger groups help provide excitement, security, and sense of belonging. Okay, so some activities, use the whole group, other times break them up in a small group. G, in most cases, it's best to keep junior highs separate from senior highs in learning situations. Especially senior high guys and junior high girls never get anything done. Okay, but that's in most cases, for learning situations, because the mental capabilities are so different. Take advantage of their interests, music, TV, so forth. You should be up on what's going on, what's being played, music-wise and TV. And last one, junior hires love camps, getting away from home, retreats, summer camping, and the like. Any questions? We have a few minutes. Believe it or not, I finished that. A few minutes before the din-din bell. Any questions or comments, or did I discourage anybody from going into junior high ministry?
I don't want to do it still too much.
Yes?
This is probably a whole other forum, but where might I learn how to go about planning a retreat? Let's say junior high.
It's an all another forum, but there are good books out. I'm glad you asked.
That was a planned question.
I have written 6 books. No. Unfortunately, I haven't written anything. All the good stuff's already taken, I feel. So. I've got two books along. One's called The Exuberant Years, A Guide for Junior High Leaders. There's some retreat ideas in there. There's a book out called The Retreat Handbook, which is put out by Judson Press, which isn't too bad. ALC has your basic youth material out of your denominations usually will come along every so often with something on how to do a retreat. And the other one is Wayne Rice's book. This is the number one book I feel on junior high ministry. It's called Junior High Ministry, A Guidebook for the Leading and Teaching of Early Adolescents. Does that help?
Yeah.
Anything else? Is that it? Everybody confused about their junior hire now, or afraid of them, or what? What you do now is go up to him or her and go, I know all about you. Can't fool me anymore. Thank you.